Well, and I really want to thank you so much for that message. Again, we have been speaking with Alec Karakatsanis. He is the founder, executive director of Civil Rights Corps, and recently wrote the article for Current Affairs, Why Crime Isn't the Question and Police Aren't the Answer. Alec, thank you for joining us on KBOO today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And this is Jinka Soderberg with KBOO Radio.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO is excited to be part of the Willamette Week Give Guide this year. When you support KBOO through Give Guide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives you a little back in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chinook Book app, plus a few other goodies. Available while supplies last. So donate to KBOO on GiveGuide today at kboo.fm/give. And thanks.
There's so much that we need to share, so send a smile and show you care.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Just before we start the show here, I'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of this show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. The 2020 election brought a number of wins for progressive demands and for working people through ballot measures in states around the nation. In Alaska, we saw voters approve ranked choice voting and open primaries. In Arizona, Montana, New Jersey, and South Dakota, the residents there all decided to legalize marijuana. In Mississippi, voters overwhelmingly chose to redesign their state's flag in order to remove the Confederate battle flag from the flag. And here in Oregon, you know, closer to home, we became the first state to legalize psilocybin mushrooms and to decriminalize all drugs. And as Portlanders, we decided to establish a new police oversight board with expanded powers and to provide tuition-free preschool through an additional income on tax income tax on households with incomes over $200,000. Mm-hmm. However, those success stories were largely overshadowed by the victory of a landmark anti-worker measure in the nation's most populated state, California. In this episode, we are going to be discussing the success of Proposition 22 in the state of California. Just to give a quick breakdown of what Prop 22 is so that you understand what we're going to be discussing, it was officially referred to, or it's officially named, the App-Based Drivers as Contractors and Labor Policies Initiative. And the goal, the stated goal of the initiative was to define app-based transportation, ride shares, and delivery drivers as independent contractors and to adopt labor and wage policies specific to app-based drivers and companies. So that's the official stated goal of it. In reality, what it means is that it basically permanently exempts gig economy companies from ever having to classify their contracted workers as employees, which means that effectively those workers are not going to be and will never be covered by labor law requirements relating to healthcare, unemployment insurance, safe working conditions, and other benefits, potentially including workers' compensation, such as death benefits. And not only that, but on top of that, included in Prop 22's fine print is a requirement that the measure cannot be modified with less than 7/8 of the state's legislature's approval, all but ensuring it cannot be overturned.
Yeah, it's killer.
Yeah.
Killer.
Yeah, so this is basically enshrined in California law. That's a huge blow to workers, and specifically gig economy workers, which is a growing sector of the economy, of the workforce, especially now with the pandemic raging on and us heading into further lockdowns and everything. That is one of the fastest growing sectors of the workforce. And so this is a huge blow to the rights of workers and to the future ability to make a living doing this and to be safe and healthy doing that. And so basically the, it kind of broke down on the way you'd expect. The people that supported the Yes campaign were largely big tech companies. Specifically, the companies were Uber, Lyft, the ones you'd expect, as well as DoorDash, Postmates, and I believe there's one other one that I'm forgetting.
But, yeah.
Either way, yeah, it's the gig economy companies and the ones that you'd expect.
And I think, too, you know, a lot of this stuff, one, we'll get into it, was kind of shrouded behind how much money each side could spend.
Yeah.
But I think in addition to the money, there's also some aspects in play here of just kind of general confusion around the terms.
Correct.
And I think a lot of the times when someone thinks of a contractor, they think of someone as successful, having multiple clients, all of this thing. But I think it's, in a lot of cases, for a gig worker, that kind of description doesn't always necessarily fit.
Absolutely.
And I think this might be a good place to talk about a little bit about, like, kind of what are seen as, like, the benefits and maybe the negatives of the gig economy.
Right.
Right? So traditionally, when you talk to someone about the gig economy, the kind of primary benefits that they talk about, you know, for the individual worker is flexibility, independence, and then kind of, like, variety of tasks. I think in this case in particular, it maybe doesn't apply as much. I mean, I guess you could drop off food in addition to people.
Right.
But really, you're kind of carrying some sort of cargo.
Yeah.
And I think in the majority of circumstances, and perhaps we'll touch on this later, those advantages aren't typically advantageous.
Yeah.
Most people aren't using this as like a side thing to make more money because, as we'll get into in the disadvantages, the pay is usually quite bad.
Exactly.
So usually this is in a stable of other things that they're doing in terms of low wage activities in order to equal one real kind of more normal looking 9-to-5 job.
Yeah, piecing a bunch of small gigs together in order to equate one full-time income. And in fact, the Yes campaign on Prop 22 played into this by pushing the narrative that workers do these gigs as part-time side hustles, which is a term that is thrown around a lot, but they in fact really latched onto as it being a hustle.
And I think the flexibility, which you see hammered on a lot, is a really interesting way to look at it because really the only reason the flexibility helps a gig worker is so that they can also find more side hustles to then be flexible with, right? Like a typical person is looking for a job to try to make income, have a family, do all these types of things. And typically the flexibility isn't as useful, right? Unless, say, maybe you're like a contractor who's doing coding work or maybe like PR or these types of things. Typical people are looking for 9-to-5 jobs for a salary that's going to pay for the things they need. So
that's stable.
Yeah, that's stable. And the flexibility in a lot of cases for, you know, a gig worker is actually going to lead to more stress and different things.
Yeah, because no one wants 10 jobs. Like, that's not anyone's ideal of what they're doing. Unless, like you said, you know, you are really like a designer or something like that that is taking on multiple big contracts. But for, you know, for the average person that is doing this gig work, you know, there's a lot of different types of jobs that exist in the gig economy, you know, quote unquote. But the most typical ones are either like delivery drivers, individuals, and then drivers, like rideshare drivers, such as Uber and Lyft and the other various companies that exist in that realm. Now, one thing, that is, you know, obviously it is pushed in the similar way that you often hear about, you know, like minimum wage jobs. It's like, well, it's just teens who are doing it to get, you know, some extra income while they're going to school. But the reality is that a growing segment of the people that do that work are actually doing it as their full-time employment.
Yeah.
And, you know, so just to sort of highlight that, there's actually, you know, so the one of the things that the campaign pushed, one of the sort of misinformation narratives that they pushed was that 80% of the drivers work less than 20 hours a week, which is can be a that's the thing they push, but it can be a bit misleading because it ignores the fact that these platforms rely almost entirely then on the 20% of the workforce that works full time and handles 80% of the actual gigs. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it is, you know, granted, yes, there are always going to be people who take on these, you know, gig jobs as a side thing to whatever other job they have as a supplemental income. But what is really needs that is it gets left by the wayside, and what should be focused on here are that 20% or in that growing percentage of the workforce that does do it full time and that is being completely exploited.
Yeah, and they're the ones kind of facing the full brunt of the disadvantages of gig work, which are mostly around how poor the pay can be, how little benefits, well, no benefits there are. Right. And then especially on top of that, you know, because they're not legally classified as employees, employers don't have to withhold income tax or Social Security from their paychecks.
Right.
So a lot of people who don't understand exactly what's going on can get really confused. And in addition to that, a lot of people aren't taking into account, you know, as a gig worker, especially owning a car and having a car, you know, a lot of the times they're not taking into account future repair or depreciation of a vehicle because essentially they're acting as their own business.
Right.
Even though to them it's not always, you know, visible up front that that's what they're doing. These things can, you know, in addition to the modest kind of poor wages they're earning, it can be even lower when you take into account, you know, the additional kind of, you know, fees that they're taking on.
Yeah.
By being their own quote unquote business.
Right. Like the burden that they pull on, you know, and not only that, but like a lot of these, if you're going to drive for Uber or Lyft, like sometimes you either go end up like renting a car and continuing to pay for that to do it, or you end up getting a weird lease from the company to buy a car.
Yeah. And essentially, yeah. So on top of that, they're taking money out of your wages to essentially use a product to then deliver what they're asking for.
Exactly.
So it's kind of this weird system that's been created. And especially too, from these kind of, you know, the people who supported Prop 22 were obviously, you know, showed their hand in that they were the ones trying to do this. But it's especially funny to me when essentially what Uber and Lyft are saying is that the government needs to help us because our business model doesn't work.
Exactly.
And so what's happening here is kind of neo-capitalism, which is basically businesses who have no, you know, way to profitability, who are being propped up by the government in order to, like, to protect jobs. Or in this case, I think people like their Ubers and they want to be able to take Ubers and they remember how bad taxis were, right? And things of that nature. So I just think it's a very interesting scenario to be caught in that it's essentially a cry for help for a business model that, you know, grew really quickly, but then doesn't really have a path forward to profitability.
Exactly. Like, it disrupted a longstanding industry. You know, specifically, we're talking about Uber and Lyft. Like,
yeah.
They disrupted the taxi industry and sort of how rides were hailed prior to that. Mm-hmm. And that's a whole other issue that really did destroy a lot of lives and led to, you know, horrible bankruptcies and things even as terrible as suicides. But, like, we just don't have time to get into that, unfortunately, right now. But it is important to point out, like you were saying, that, like, the business model of these companies really only works if we're talking Uber, Lyft, or any of these delivery companies.
If they can pay their workers nothing.
Yeah, so if you can fully automate the driving of a car or the delivering of food, and until that is possible, these companies are not going to be profitable. And so, exactly like Elliot just said, they have figured out a way by rigging the system, by using their throwing their money around in a post-Citizens United world to essentially write laws that subsidize them, that essentially allow them to continue being in a viable business model despite the fact that the market itself has deemed them unviable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's sort of the larger argument that I'm trying to get to here, which is that basically what we have seen in Prop 22 play out is the sort of end game, or at least like the sort of the vision of what the writers, the people who wrote Citizens United, that horrible Supreme Court decision that allowed money to be speech in politics, that this is what they envisioned, or this is it becoming realized, where essentially you have mass, like, big corporations and big wealthy donors throwing a never-ending supply of money at a political issue in order to be able to essentially just write the laws that benefit them directly. And, you know, on top of that, that's what we've seen.
Well, I mean, on top of all of that, it's just not regulated.
Exactly.
Right? Like, the Department of Transportation has, you know, much less authority over the amount of hours someone can drive, right? A group of workers who aren't considered employees have a much more difficult time unionizing, and perhaps we'll touch on it. Obviously, you know, Uber and Lyft drivers have made progress in that area, but essentially, these employees, in quotes, are being stripped of the majority of the rights that basically the last 100 years America has spent gaining them.
Exactly.
Right? So,
exactly.
In addition to the burden that these companies create on the society, right? Yeah. By having to be propped up by government, right? By basically paying people a non-living wage to, you know, increase share price, because these companies aren't profitable, right? It's all based on future earning potential and number of users and all of this stuff, right? So in addition to all of that, it's very un-American, right? I think it's easy to wrap it up in the freedom and the choice and the flexibility. But, I mean, those really have never been staples of the American economy.
No.
This is a very new, interesting, kind of disruptive, in quotes, right, technology that, while I think is very convenient and people enjoy it, is maybe not really feasible in the current state.
Yeah. And really, yeah, just to sort of put a bullet on what you said, just a quick quote here from former labor secretary under Bill Clinton, Robert Reich, who said that Prop 22 is great for employers, but is a huge loss for workers.
Yeah.
And basically that it will encourage other companies to reclassify their workforce as independent contractors. And once they do that, over a century of labor practices, protections vanish overnight.
Yeah.
A century of hard-fought and bloody battles and hard-fought victories for labor protections completely circumnavigated.
Yeah.
You know, they are figuring out a way to undermine all of the gains that the working class and that workers in this country have fought so hard for over the last century plus, simply by throwing enough money at a problem to rewrite the laws for yourself.
Yeah, and I think it gets scarier too when you start thinking about maybe more high skill activities that could possibly be turned into some sort of gig economy.
That's really the crux of this.
Because, you know, with these things being unregulated, it's much easier, and with your pay being low, right, and the flexible nature of how many jobs you get to have in order to equal one normal job, it very much so can lead to, you know, obviously situations where you're not at your best, or you're tired, or you're overworked, or the right, like the number of hours that someone drives behind the wheel, which can be regulated in certain industries and not here.
Yeah.
This can lead to, you know, maybe suboptimal work conditions for people who really are employees, even though they're not being treated that way.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, you know, so actually just to give a little background here to exactly what you just said. All of this kind of stems out of a 2018 California State Supreme Court decision, which is sort of where the ball got rolling to get Prop 22 started. And it's a Supreme Court decision that it's the case, the Dynamex company versus some plaintiff, I'm not sure exactly who. But either way, it was a 2018 decision that put in place Assembly Bill 5, which essentially says that It's the state law that requires companies to grant workers employee status based on what they set out as a ABC test. And so a quick description of what the ABC test is. It was a standard laid out that determines a worker to be an employee instead of an independent contractor if they meet one of these three planks, which is if his or her job forms part of a company's core business, if the bosses direct the work the way that the work is done, or if the worker has not established an independent trade or business through the work that they're doing. And based on that ABC test, I would argue that all of these gig workers meet all three of those.
Yeah.
Not only just one, but all three of those planks.
I would agree.
Which,
yeah,
according to the state's Supreme Court, would fully classify them as employees and not independent contractors.
Yep.
And so as a result of that decision that came down, the companies realized, I think, basically that this was an existential threat to their business model and to their ability to continue, you know, being unprofitable yet growing.
Yeah.
And so they got the ball rolling and created this this campaign around basically putting a new ballot measure forward and confusing people and reclassifying all these workers. It's an unfortunate situation that one positive step, one, you know, 2018, you had a very positive pro-worker decision by the Supreme Court, led directly to a much bigger onslaught of money to overturn it. And it's unfortunately a thing you see over and over again in American politics and in labor politics in particular, where you have the workers gain a little bit and then capital comes right back at them much harder. So that is, you know, that's just sort of the background of where it came from. You know, the actual case itself was brought by same-day delivery drivers. They sued essentially their employer, Dynamex, saying that they were, you know, being intentionally misclassified as independent contractors.
Yeah.
And so that set forth precedent that is now being completely, reworked by the state of California. And this is based on not only, you know, just intuition, but also on the things that the people who were on the victorious side of this have been saying. It's pretty clear that this is not going to just remain in California. It is going to spread around the rest of the country, and potentially the rest of the world. Just a few bits of evidence towards that. You have people like Uber's CEO saying, going forward, you'll see us more loudly advocate for new laws like Prop 22. And that Uber hopes to, quote, work with governments across the U.S. And across the world to make this a reality. And Lyft, you know, the company Lyft, sent out a celebratory email calling the law a groundbreaking step towards the creation of a third way that recognizes independent workers in the U.S., which, you know, third way is already a very triggering term for anyone on the left, but that, you know, they really leaned into that there. And so it's pretty clear, and there's a bunch of other quotes that we could throw out there and a bunch of other statements from people, but, like, it's very clear that the goal of these, the tech companies as the vanguard of this, but, like, just sort of capital in general, is to figure out ways to find loopholes around treating their employees as workers and making, you know, basically gigifying the entire economy in a piecemeal forms that, you know, however they can, in order to not have to provide people benefits and not have to take care of the people that actually make them profitable and make their work possible.
And I think it might be a little hyperbolic to say, but I mean, essentially the gig economy is like capitalism goes in like a hyperbaric chamber and like powers up.
Right.
I mean, this is like the best way imaginable that I think anyone, you know, any neoclassical like economist could imagine, right, to really squeak out the most you possibly could from that difference between, you know, the value a worker creates, right, and then the value that you pay them in return.
Exactly.
And I think this is kind of the next evolution of that. It's just a way to, you know, like you said, immediately dissolve all of the work that, you know, labor has done in order to really create a safer kind of more, environment for workers who can, you know, do their job and, you know, still maintain some semblance of kind of a position in society, even though, you know, a lot of the times this middle class is kind of shrinking and shrinking. This is really the next step.
It really
of
is.
That.
Yeah, it 100% is. And, you know, just to sort of underpin the point that, like, this is a result of not only Citizens United allowing money to be speech in politics, but also exactly like you just said, this being the sort of end game or the dream of where, you know, capitalism inevitably leads to and what these companies would most desire. This campaign, the Yes on Prop 22 campaign, was the most expensive ballot measure in U.S. history.
Yeah.
Not only in California history, but in U.S. history. And it really does deal with the existential question for gig economy companies, which is why they spent, you know, they felt willing to spend that much money on it.
Well, their very survival was kind of at stake, I think, in their minds, right? When you're not willing to kind of change up certain aspects of your company and how it is designed, then I think in your head, then this is kind of the battleground, right?
Right.
And, like I said earlier, I think the not having to turn a profit for right now is not a problem, right? Because they're moving on to these more automation type things.
Right.
So
yeah.
Not only is this a let's hurt workers now with this law, in the long run, it's they're not going to even have these jobs later.
Yeah, I mean,
so
like,
it's kind of an interesting just, I don't know, it's like a two-step plan to kind of
exactly
to finally hit some sort of profitability when, you know, maybe I think typically, right, in the American kind of sense, it would be, well, you know, I think the market has decided that maybe you need to do this in a little bit of a different way.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if we said it already at this point, but the Yes campaign spent over $200 million on this campaign.
Yeah.
And so, like, $200 million may seem like a lot of money to just get a ballot measure passed, but it's a lot less than the long-term prospect of paying a living wage to workers and being responsible to consumers for safety and accessibility. And so, you know, they gambled on this, but it paid off for them, they being the companies and the individual donors that really supported it. And, you know, I mean, just to sort of highlight that, like, Uber, the company Uber, lost $4.7 billion in the first half of 2020. And so, yeah, their business model is completely unprofitable unless they can further degrade the value of these, of the work being done by the people that actually make up their workforce.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, this prop was a very, not a special scenario, but a kind of more niche scenario where the kind of definitions and the words that you use, you know, were a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
So I think money in this sense was more effective than it could be, you know, say for some other type of campaign or some other ballot measure that maybe was a little bit more clear, right?
Yeah.
The use of contractor, the way they kind of skew the flexibility and the independence, it doesn't necessarily, the math doesn't add up there. So the money, I think, was pretty effective in this case.
Yeah, and I will want to touch on that in 1 second, but I just want to say for folks who are just tuning in now, we are discussing the recent victory of Proposition 22 in California, which was supported by big tech companies, particularly gig economy companies, and it permanently exempts the gig economy workers from being classified as employees. They will permanently be independent contractors. And so, yeah, getting back to what Elliot was just saying, you know, not only was there a massive amount of money spent on this, but because of the fact that that it could be a bit confusing to understand the difference between being a flexible, you know, contractor and an employee from the average voter, the Yes campaign, the folks who were in favor of passing this, really leaned into that, and they put forward an unprecedented PR spin machine that basically really worked to mischaracterize the measure and confuse voters. Here's just a few examples of what they did, and they did a lot of things, you know, whether it be, you know, TV commercials or billboards or ads or all this stuff. But the company Uber pushed in-app messages to passengers claiming, quote, "Your driver supports Prop 22," and they forced drivers to click a button in their app saying yes on 22, Prop 22, before they could even log into work. So in order to be able to access the app for either a consumer or, you know, for either a rider or a driver, they had to basically agree or go through an ad for supporting Prop 22. On top of that, DoorDash, which is a food delivery service, they forced delivery workers to drop off pro-Prop 22 pamphlets in their deliveries, in every delivery, which essentially, you know, it was meant to give customers the false impression that the drivers themselves and, you know, by relation, the restaurants that the food came from also supported Prop 22. So even though that driver may have been very opposed to it and they may have been able to, you know, they may have had given the opportunity, said something to the customer, it looked to the customer as if this is something that my driver supports. They put this pamphlet in there. And because of the way that COVID has changed the relationship, you know, most of these drivers are probably just leaving things on the front porch and, you know, sending a text. And so you don't get that face-to-face of being like, hey, this piece of propaganda is in there. Do not listen to it. Let me give you my side of it. And then, you know, on top of that, the Yes campaign also worked to confuse pro-worker voters by sending out mass mailings purporting to be from progressive organizations with names like Feel the Burn and things like that. So playing on the grassroots sentiment of a lot of activated voters who would want to support these workers, but may have just been confused by all the misinformation out there. And yeah, I mean, Uber drivers even ended up suing the company, claiming that they had been pressured, or that the company had been pressuring drivers to support the Yes campaign by filling out a Yes on Prop 22 survey, which could then be used to punish folks who did not support it, or, you know, fire them if they didn't support it. So just to wrap up this discussion, which, you know, there is so much more we can talk about, but we are running out of time here. Just looking ahead to the future about what this means, you know, we know this will be coming up in other states around the country, potentially depending on, you know, how things go in you know, the federal election, we may see a national bill to try and change this. Really kind of what we need to see is it's very clear that politics will probably not save us in this because of, you know, the fact that money can essentially be speech and buy this type of legislation. And, you know, despite the fact that, yes, President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris both were, you know, nominally opposed to this, the Democratic Party itself did not mount a lot of opposition to it, including the fact that this fight really took place, you know, it was seated in San Francisco, which is Nancy Pelosi's district, Nancy Pelosi being the Speaker of the House, the leader of the Democratic Party in the House. And Pelosi herself really did nothing to fight against it besides saying a few things here and there. She didn't mount any real opposition. And so what that kind of indicates is that it is not going to be politicians who save us in this, and it certainly won't be the employers or capital. What it really, the only solution moving forward is that it will be up to workers. The future hangs on working class people organizing themselves to defend their rights, even as capital marshals a seemingly infinite amount of money to stop them. So, you know, unity among workers, both unionized and not, employees and independent contractors alike, is the only way forward in this fight. And, you know, I would urge you to go and read more about this subject on your own, and really keep an eye out for this type of thing, legislation popping up in, you know, a state near you or a city near you or just on the national level. And, you know, certainly talk to your rideshare person or your delivery person and understand how they feel about this and just keep this in mind moving forward. But yeah, keep an eye out for it and vote no on these types of things as they come up in your state. With that, we are going to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
We will be talking to you soon.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime, and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything